I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Nightside Project.
I may be super, but
I am no hero.
Nightside on KSL.
A limited edition summer season.
You realize, though, Alex, this is just temporary.
Yeah, I still took your parking space, and I'm not giving it back.
The Nightside Project with Ethan Millard and Alex Carey. Streaming live on Alexa and on KSL News Radio at 102.7 FM.
Welcome back to the Nightside Project. I'm Ethan Millard here with Alex Carey. This is a special limited edition spring season of the program. We hope you've been enjoying it. We have just loved bringing it to you over the last, month and a half. We're into this now, Alex, this special edition of the show.
If you start making me count down the actual days we've done it, it makes it sound like it's not very much.
But it feels like
it's felt it like a lot longer.
Well, you know, this is the ongoing conversation that we're about to have right here is something that you and I have been talking about both on air and off air. Our reaction to the protests, the treatment of Black people in America, what's our role, what's our understanding, and how do we be part of this? And we wanted to try and bring as much information as we could to listeners. And we wanted to focus on making sure that we stayed focused on what's important in this debate, because there's a lot of noise, a lot of headlines, a lot of events that are pulling our attention and our passions a lot of different directions. So we want to make sure that we stayed focused on the important things. And then also, for everyone out there in our community who are people of goodwill that want to engage this larger effort, support it, be a part of it, and be part of the solution moving forward, we wanted to find some resources for all of us that want to do that as well. So
yes,
we have a special guest.
We
she
do.
Is the Assistant Vice President for Diversity and the Chief Diversity Officer at Weber State, Adrienne Andrew. Adrienne, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Alex and Ethan. You guys are great.
Well, so we've been, Ethan and I have been trying to figure out a way that would be a little bit less kind of, I don't know, the part of the issue, I think, is trying to get people to engage in a time where it's like, I'm not even going to, because look, we work in a newsroom. A lot of people already go, I don't want to hear this bad news anymore. And a lot of this feels like such bad news right now that we have the tendency to just totally wash it out because it's just noise.
Right. And that's natural because we're in the midst of a pandemic. Don't forget, that's part of what heightens everything that's happening right now. And admit it, nobody wants to say, yeah, I'm a racist.
Right. That's right.
Nobody wants to say that. But we actually have to start with ourselves. At least this is from my perspective. I think we start with a self-evaluation, because when we hear that somebody else gets called a racist, our backs cinch up and we
That's
look
right.
around because we don't want to be identified as racist.
Yeah, you hope it's somebody else.
What I did wasn't racist.
Right.
Yeah. What was that?
You say you hope it's somebody else and you're like, they're not talking about me. So Ethan told me to get out a piece of paper. Ethan's got a piece of paper out.
Yeah, because I know you have an exercise that you can kind of walk us through, because as you indicated on the phone to me when we chatted a little bit earlier this evening, the number one place where people of goodwill in our community can start if they want to engage this and be part of the solution, the number one place is with yourself, right? With the self-evaluation.
Absolutely. So you've got out your pieces of paper.
Got them.
Gentlemen, take a pen or a pencil or whatever writing utensil you have and put your name in the middle of that paper and put a circle around it.
Okay.
And next, and I'm inviting our viewers or listeners to do this as well.
Yeah.
And then take your writing tool and do some offshoots like your brainstorming. And I want you to think about the identities that you hold and which identities do you hold? So for example, I might write that I am a Black woman. I'm a mother. I'm an activist. I'm a quilter. I, I'm a Presbyterian, and these are identities that are primary identities for me, right? And so I'm just going to encourage you to sit down and start brainstorming all of those different things about who you are,
okay,
things that make you you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to ask you to look at that list of things that you've got stringing off from your name, and I want you to look at those identities that you hold, and I want you to circle the one that makes you just feel the most you, the best, the one that's who you are. That's what makes you you.
Mm.
And I want you to think about how good you feel making the circle around that word or series of words about who you are and about how good it makes you feel. Now I'm going to ask you to look at that same brainstorm. And I'm going to ask you, could anyone look at those identities that you wrote down and say something negative? Maybe look at an identity and question you as a person, your ethics, your beliefs, your ability, because of this identity that you hold. And I want you to look at that brainstorm, and I want you to circle the one that suddenly there's a pit in your stomach that you feel. Because while that's who you are, it's not who you are. Other people are assigning something different to that identity that you hold. It doesn't mean what it means to you. And I want you to circle that one. And I want you to think about the feeling that you're having. Maybe you're a little bit anxious. Maybe you're a little bit stressed. Your heart rate might go up a little bit. You might get dry mouth because it's an uncomfortable place. It might even be a painful place. Now, I want you to step back and look at that paper. And I want to ask you, how much of your day gets spent in the space that makes you feel amazing? And how much of your day gets spent in the space that makes you scared and anxious and fearful?
So, I'm sorry, go ahead. Finish your thought.
No, go ahead.
I just had a quick question. So, I mean, not to jump ahead, but
okay.
Oh boy, here comes Ethan with his good student.
No, it's not that. I'm just.
Sorry, I'm a little ahead of you because I took the test. It's
Alex,
fine.
I actually wrote good student as one of my identities, so you should know.
I wrote down better than Ethan at school. That's what I put. So I'm noticing too that a lot of these are when you say that about, you know, you write down identities next to yourself and you go, you know what? Those are like some of them feel more aspirational or like almost ticking a box. Like, well, I'm technically on paper, yes, I'm a dad, right? Technically on paper, I'm a husband, you know. And so you look at those things. Now, my five kids would go, we love our dad, you know. And it's like, yeah, but there are times where you think, man, I wish I could be better at that, or you know, whatever it might be in those things. But it's so you're saying too that. A lot of those things we write down for ourselves, like, yeah, that's my identity. Some of it is, like, not your identity. You kind of maybe wish it was a bigger part of your identity.
You might wish it, but it also may be your identity and you don't fully engage in it.
Yeah.
But what I'm really trying to get at is think about those identities you hold and whether you feel that you're good at it or bad at it. And I'm sure you're a better husband and father than you realize. At least I hope so. If not, we can get you some help.
He is.
But I want you to look at the things that you know others see and that they don't like, that makes them uncomfortable to know about you.
Yeah.
And maybe there are aspects of your identity that you don't like to think about. Maybe you have a criminal record. Maybe you've made some decisions in your past with outcomes that are less than what you would hope for yourselves or your children, but those are a part of you now. And what does it feel like to be in that space? And then as you're thinking about how much of your life gets spent in that negative space, that negative feeling, and how much of it gets spent in that positive space, that positive feeling, I want you to consider what it would be like if only 50% of your life felt good. But then I'm going to say, you know what? Let's say only 25% of your life you feel that good feeling. Mm. But what happens if I take you down to 10%? Because it's an identity that you have no control over. The color of your skin is something that just is. And if people feel like the identity that you have because of your skin color is negative or bad or untrustworthy or unsafe, I want you to think about what it would be like to walk around in your community every day. Now, compound it, because we're here in Utah, and I was born and raised here. I'm a black woman. But I grew up walking around without seeing a lot of other people who look like me. So if people think negatively of me just because my skin is brown, and I don't see a lot of other brown people around me, does that make it worse? So when we begin looking at ourselves, when we begin exploring where we are, that's the key to change. Because institutions and organizations and structures don't just appear. They're made up of people. And guess what? We are the people.
We're speaking to the Chief Diversity Officer, Weber State University, Assistant Vice President, also up at the School for Diversity, and Adrian Andrews is our guest on the Nightside Project right now. We're going to keep you for one more segment here, Adrian. Is that okay? Because I want to ask more questions.
Fantastic.
I want to ask more questions about what kind of, I mean, is in communities that are so high in numbers when it comes to white people versus other ethnicities that are around, having these conversations at home get harder. And so I want to know what that is like, having that conversation, a more difficult conversation where it's not as easy to say, look at this person across the street, look at this person over here, because it's hard to explain to kids right now. And I know it's a cop out a little bit to say, hey, but I have young kids, and I honestly, even having done this for a long time with my kids, trying to be a good dad, there are still questions I have about the best way to approach it. So we're going to take a break here. We'll come back. We've got more to do and more to talk about here. The Assistant Vice President for Diversity and the Chief Diversity Officer at Weber State University, Adrian Andrews, is our guest. Stay with us right here. The Nightside Project continues on KSL News Radio.
Nightside, we're all friends here. The Nightside Project on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome back to the Nightside Project. I'm Ethan Millard here with Alex Keery. We have a special guest this hour. Her name is Adrian Andrew. She is the Assistant Vice President for Diversity and the Chief Diversity Officer at Weber State University. And she's been kind enough to join us tonight. We've kind of talked through a self-evaluation exercise. And Adrian, you know, during the break, I was really struck, you know, kind of walking through that, dividing out, you know, looking at the different facets of who I am and thinking about what my life would be like. And I think especially as a child, it'd be the hardest if everyone around me only saw what they perceived to be something that was negative about me. And that's the space that I had to live in, with feeling that constant and unfair judgment. And it's harrowing. I mean, it really is. But that is, in effect, a big part of your experience growing up here in Utah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm a Davis County woman, born and raised, born actually in Weber County, but raised in Davis County, and a product of state institutions, University of Utah undergrad. And I am committed to Utah and living here, which is why I'm almost, you know, 47, still living in Utah with my family. But that's because there is so much that is wonderful here, that I believe that we can work through these issues of race and racism, institutional, structural, and systemic racism and oppression.
Yeah.
Because I think the people of Utah are ready to do that. Our governor held a conversation the other day with members of the MLK and the Multicultural Commissions, both part of his administration, and had a real serious talk about what the issues are going forward and how the state can be supportive.
Do they feel like they are positive? Like they do you
are
feel
they
like
going somewhere?
Yeah, and do you feel like the governor gets it, and that these commissions are like being heard, and that everybody is kind of that people aren't just doing it for the sake of going, well, write it down, we have to have this conversation at least? Or do you feel like the governor and the people that are part of our state structure to try to make some change, that they listen and that they want to have things happen, that they could be effective?
I think people really do want the change. I think our leadership is more invested in than in just getting a report. But as I indicated in our conversation yesterday, then you have to show us where the money goes. Mm-hmm. Because words and platitudes are lovely, but at the end of the day, we know commitment is where dollars go. So if you want to change structures and institutions and policy and practice, then you have to put resources and people on the ground to help make those changes occur.
Let me read a text. Let me just read a text message we got from a listener here, because I think he would, and it's somebody who texts our show all the time. We know him very well. And he says, I can't wait for this next segment talking about having you on, Adrian. And he says, I've been really feeling bad for not being a bigger proponent for change. And he talked about not saying enough or not doing enough. Myself and my wife have best friends 20 plus years that are African American, and we've been trying to figure this out all this last week. And it's like, because there's this idea of what do you say to the people that you know who are people of color? Are you supposed to say sorry, or are you supposed to just engage in a conversation? What do you think the best way for a person who just wants to go and have that conversation and put their arm around somebody, or how does that start? How do you figure that out?
The first thing you can say is, I'm seeing you in a new way. And I maybe understood that there were issues, but I didn't realize the extent. And maybe now is not the best time for me to ask you to teach me what I need to know. But it's, I want to acknowledge that I realize something has to be different, and it has to begin with me. If you have books or resources you want to share, share them with me. But no, I want to be better because I know I can do and be better. And a better friend to you is what I want to do and be. So that means you can go, and I'm an academic, go get books. You can get books about identity, about race, about white fragility, about white privilege, and what those things mean. And I just got to tell you guys, the critical component of white privilege that people get really upset about is white privilege does not mean your life is easy. It doesn't mean you don't deal with obstacles. What white privilege means is that your white identity doesn't ever hamper you in addition to those other things.
Well, it's interesting. In the conversation we were having about putting like down what our identity is in the practice we did, I didn't write down white guy, you know, like,
because
I wouldn't have to put it in the way, right. I wouldn't have to put it in the way
neutral.
Of the things that I can just say like, hey, this is my thing. These are the things that I've done. Mm-hmm. And yet maybe the first or second one you said was I'm a black woman because that is the thing that comes up maybe the most in your identity, in the work that you do, in the interactions that you have with strangers. I mean, all those things.
Right. And so it also serves to demonstrate that a lot of identity is defaulted. If you identify as white or Caucasian, if you are heterosexual, if you are able-bodied, those are all considered the standards or norms. And then everything else is different from that.
Yeah.
And so that's recognizing that is hard because you're like, well, I didn't do anything to be born into this particular body. And you're right, you didn't. But what you can do is work to make sure that other people have the same access that you do, that making sure that people have the same opportunities that you have. It's not about giving people something. I think there's a lot of confusion about equity versus equality. Equality means that we all get the same thing. Equity means we get the same things we need. So if the three of us are sitting in a room and we take off our shoes and put them on the floor and we all switch shoes with someone else, I'm going to guarantee you someone is not going to like wearing my shoes. But guess what? The equality is that we all still have shoes. The equity issue is that we don't have shoes that fit.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So that's part of that deeper dialogue.
Adrian Andrews, we've run plumb out of time here, Adrian. We appreciate you
giving
us your time here.
I was hoping this conversation kind of went as I hope that it would be meaningful. But the more we talk about this, Adrian, we have not even scratched the surface. Can we do this again?
I would be delighted.
Because I think that maybe Alex, this is something you and I can do.
We make a weekly date with Adrian. Mm-hmm. Her husband's permission, pending. That those are
not a real date.
Now look, we can send her some food and say, hey, have a meal while we have our radio conversation.
It
so
could be a Zoom date.
But if you're down, Adrienne, we would love to have this conversation every week.
I am in it. Every week, I'm in it with you. Let's do it.
All right, we're going to take the break here. Adrienne Andrews, she's the Assistant Vice President for Diversity and Chief Diversity Officer at Weber State University. We appreciate her joining us on the program. And we are going to do this more because I just like the questions and the answers. I like seeing the different perspective. I like knowing the fact that I have always felt like somebody who has been a person of equality but have lacked in the equity part. And I think that's an amazing thing. So we can learn more every week. We're going to take the break here. We'll come back. Second hour of the program next right here on the Nightside Project, KSL News Radio. New studies, all sorts of fun things. Ethan's headlines are all coming up. Stay with us.
KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.